Hello, Michael.
Hey.
Yeah, this is Captain Fred from Berkeley Liberation Radio.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Do I have your permission to tape record our conversation?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll just start firing questions at you then.
Okay.
It's been about 3 years since your last Spearhead record. How are people responding to the new disc, Stay Human?
Well, the response has been really great from both, you know, the press, but mainly from our fans, you know, and people who have supported us for a long time, and they've come to know me as an artist that puts you know, the music and the politics in together in a way that's understandable and enjoyable. And so people who have heard this album are really appreciative of the fact that I've been still, you know, doing both those things. So it's been going great.
Okay. Now, I understand you were inspired by Micro Radio. Have you thought about using a radio transmitter on your concert tour?
Yeah, we've actually done a little bit of that, taking out a little transmitter and doing our live broadcast of our shows, and then beforehand doing a couple interviews and just playing some records over there, carrying that with us on our bus. And I've been encouraged by, you know, what's taking place with Micro Radio all around the world, and in the spirit of people who are, as Jellaby officers, not just hating the media, but becoming the media. And in addition to that, I've been inspired by the internet media, things like indiemedia.org and other people who have just decided that it's time that the corporate interests of the world are not the only people who have the opportunity to express their views on a mass level.
Right. Now, your new disc makes a strong statement for Micropower Radio and against the death penalty.
Yeah.
Do you expect any fallout from this?
Well, I'm always aware that there's people who don't agree with, you know, the things that I do politically. And so I've, you know, there's been people in interviews that I've done. I did an interview with the New York Post recently, and the guy was very much in favor of the death penalty, and he really tried to take me to task about it. But in the end, he said, you know, I listened to your record for a weekend long, and I just couldn't take it off my CD player. I love the song so much. And he said, you know, in the case of Timothy McVeigh, I think we should really fry this motherfucker. But in the case of Sister Fatima, who's the fictitious character on my album, you know, she was innocent, and that was really wrong. And I just looked at him and I said, well, you know, unfortunately, you can't have it both ways. You know, either everyone lives or everyone gets killed. You know, we can't, unfortunately, pick or choose who they are.
Right. Now, there's a lot of people on death penalty in America, mm-hmm. and conceivably you could have made the story on the disc about one of them, but you chose to make the story about a fictitious character. Could you tell me about the decision to do that?
Well, there's a number of trial cases like
to get that kid's number in,
or Leonard Peltier, or a lot of other people who are people that I feel very strongly are innocent, that I could have written about. But I chose, rather than to try to prove to the world that one person was innocent, I tried to show that the whole system is guilty. The system of the prison industrial complex and the death penalty as the ultimate end of the prison industrial complex, I tried to show that it was wrong. And when I first started thinking about the death penalty, I was a kid, and I started to think, what if they got the wrong dude, and what if that wrong dude happens to be me? And as a black person, being the wrong person in the wrong time is a part of our experience. But as I grew older, I began to realize that the death penalty is wrong for one simple truth, which is that none of us has the right to kill, whether it's people gangbanging in a neighborhood or governments dropping bombs on other nations, or us granting our government the right to kill its own citizens.
Okay. Now, I see you're holding a child on the back photo on the CD. Are you a father now?
Yeah, I've been the father for, actually, my oldest son turns turns 14 in a couple weeks, and my youngest son, Ade, is 2 and 3 months now, so, yeah.
So that's Ade on the back of the CD?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand you were adopted and raised in a white family. Did this cause confusion for you?
Well, I was adopted and raised in a family that was had white parents, but also adopted another black kid, so I was raised with another black child in the family.
Mm-hmm.
What it brought up for me was not necessarily confusion, but just the sense that I didn't really fit in with the family that I was raised with, you know, and I always had a sense of being brown, I always had a sense of my African history, my Native American history, but because of, you know, my parents, and also because of the alcoholism that existed in my family, I grew up in kind of a difficult childhood, and what it left me with was always a sense of compassion for the underdog in the world, and that is reflected in my music and in my work and in my life. I'm always looking for situations where people have been mistreated, or who people who feel left out or marginalized for whatever reason, be it their color, their gender, their interests in life, their sexuality, whatever it is. I'm always in support of diversity and strong and healthy expressions of diversity. And I've never been one who's in favor of this concept of the melting pot. I'm more of somebody who's in favor of this, the fruit salad concept, where you know, a strawberry can still be a strawberry and live next to a banana and an orange and an apple, and each of us have our own cultures and our own identities, but that we can still live amongst one another, and together we make something more beautiful than when we're just on our own.
That's a really great metaphor. I love that.
Thanks.
Your music seems to be moving in new directions. Have you thought about your next recording project?
Well, I'm always writing songs, and so as I've been out on the road the last couple months, I've written several new songs. And, you know, writing a song on a guitar and singing it is one thing, and going into a studio and creating a recorded work is something completely different. And for a long time, I was just really a live artist. I didn't really spend a lot of time thinking about being a recording artist and the art of actually making a listenable piece of work. And recently, in the last couple of years, I've really concentrated on trying to become the best recording artist that I can be. And so I built myself a studio, and on this album I did everything from the recording, the mixing, the writing, the producing, the editing, the mastering, and we even directed the first video that we put out. And in doing that, I've learned two things. One is what it takes to do these things, and getting a better mastery of my craft. And then secondly, learning that there's some of these things that I can let go of, and that it's better off to delegate the responsibility to another expert that can add their own flavor. So on the next album, I look forward to, you know, collaborating with other producers and other engineers. And I think now that I have a better understanding of how it all works, I feel more safe about relinquishing that control.
Okay, now you used to be on Capitol Records,
mm-hmm.
and now you're on 6 Degrees Records.
Mm-hmm.
How are things different?
Well, 6 Degrees is an independent label here in San Francisco that we've licensed this record to, and actually recorded the album for our own label, Boo Boo Wax, and then we worked out a distribution deal through 6 Degrees. But we're still free as an artist to put out our own records on our own label. the big difference between a major label and an independent label is the scale of economics. A major label, their goal is to sell multi-million of units. And ultimately, they're responsible to the shareholders who have a stake in the company. And at the end of the fourth quarter, those shareholders, you know, took a look at the books and they say, hey, wow, what has the company done? They don't say, what is the music that was recorded and how did it make people feel or what did it make people think or did it encourage them to get up in the morning and dance while they were cleaning their toilet. They just look at how many units did we sell. And so their scale of spending reflects that. You have to spend a lot of money in order to do that. And so what they do is they'll sign a whole bunch of artists, you know, 100 artists, and hoping that only a small percentage of them will become wildly successful and will make up for all the other losses that they've taken over the year. And an independent label can't afford to do that. They have to be very conscientious about how they spend their money and the economics of it, because they're not looking at selling millions of units. They're looking at selling, you know, tens of thousands. And so they don't spend money in that way. They also are not beholden to having to sell millions of records, so they can put out music that is maybe more meaningful or emotional or spiritual without having to feel like they have the pressure of making it a super global thing. And so in that way, the music on an independent label has a better chance of staying creative and pure and innovative.
Okay, so you feel like you have more artistic control the way things are now?
Yeah, I feel like I've always had artistic control, but as far as, you know, if we've always sold a couple hundred thousand records worldwide, and at a major label, that's something that they would just laugh at, you know. And I've always thought, well, man, if I'm selling a couple hundred thousand records, I should be able to make a living off that. That's an incredible amount of people who know and have purchased my music. But when you're on a label, a major label, they've spent so much money on you that you have to pay back that you end up not being able to make a living doing that. And so we've changed the economics of it in that we put the money up front, and we spend the money in a limited fashion, and are still able to sell the same amount of records, but are able to, you know, generate more income from it at the end of the day. So.
Okay, over at Free Radio Berkeley, we used to play TV, The Drug of a Nation, and we love that song. What do you say to people who just don't get what you're saying about mainstream media?
Well, the first thing is you have to understand that whoever is, you know, paying the piper chooses the tune, you know. And when you have, you know, General Electric, Disney Corporation, AOL, Time Warner, Microsoft, who are owning these media outlets, those interests of those companies are going to be the ones that you hear. And so you're not going to hear a program that really challenges materialism, or that really challenges what's taking place environmentally in the world, or politically, or about labor practices that are being, you know, sponsored by these corporate entities. And that's why it's so important today, like I say on our new record on the song Rock the Nation, you know, take over television and radio stations. You know, it's time for us to express our voice, be it through mic or radio, through independent media on the internet, or through what I feel is the best form of media, which is one-on-one communication.
Okay, now, I understand there is a radio-friendly version of the new CD for broadcast. Mm-hmm. Is it a problem for you having your words censored?
Well, I don't put a lot of words on our records that need to be censored. I think there's three times on the record where I say fuck, you know, and so It's not a problem for me that, you know, if I take those words out, it really doesn't bother me because it's not the message of the song. You know, the overall message of the song is still there. But it is hard trying to create music that can be at the same time enjoyable to, you know, a pop or mainstream audience and carry a message that has some weight and potency. And that's what I, you know, have always strived to do is to, you know, make the message reach beyond just, you know, the usual suspects and create music that is going to, you know, be something that's very listenable and enjoyable regardless of whether you are hearing the message firsthand. And then over time, having seeds be planted in the lyrics so that over time they take hold and they grow in the hearts and the minds of the listener.
Okay, now the new disc, it seems to sort of cross over into different categories, and I'm wondering, like, what part of the record store they might put you in, and what, you know, what sort of little box they might put you in on the radio, whether they're going to play you on the urban station or the rock station or the easy listening soul station. I mean, what kind of little box do you see yourself fitting into?
Yeah, I don't see myself fitting into any of them.
Yeah.
And that's a blessing and a curse. I've always felt strongly that music is just music, you know, and you know, I look at my friends and peers around me, and most of them have in their collection a Bob Marley record. They have a Public Enemy record. They have a Beatles record. They might have a Clash record, a Jimi Hendrix record, a Sly Stone record. They've got all kinds of music. They're just collectors, fans of music. They don't say, I'm just this or I'm just that. And that's who I make music for, is for people who love the experience of being made vulnerable by the emotion of music.
Okay, now could you tell us about your website?
Yeah, our website is called spearheadvibrations.com, and we've tried, since we made it, since we started it, to have it be a place where people who go to the site really create the site. And the most lively place on our site is our message board, and we have three different message boards. One is it's entitled The World, and another is Poetry, and the other is music. And so people write in about what they think about each of those issues and share their poetry. They swap audio files or talk about shows that they've been to recently. They ask for rides to spearhead gigs or whatever, or put up statements about events or activism that they feel is important in the world section.
Okay. And one final question, then I'll let you go, Michael, because I know you're really busy and got a lot of stuff going on. This interview is going to be broadcast on Micropower Radio. Is there anything you'd like to say to our listeners?
Well, the main thing that I have to say today is you know, we're living in this time where the world is increasingly telling us that we are numbers, that we are consumers, machines, robots. And sometimes it's really hard to hold on to the dignity of what it means to be human. Our successes, our failures, our positive traits, our negative traits, all the things that make us be the wondrous beings that we are. And I think that the biggest crime that the corporate world has done to man, or to the world, is not just, you know, the obvious things like the environmental destruction or the labor you know, abuses around the world. But the biggest crime is that they've got us believing that if we buy Coca-Cola, it's going to make us happy. If we buy a Toyota car, it's going to make us sexy. If we wear certain clothes, it's going to make us have a lot of friends. And I'm thinking to myself, well, God, I want to be happy. I want to be sexy. I want to have a lot of friends. But materialism is not the thing that ever does that for us at the end of the day. Having all those things is not the thing that's going to make our wives and sons and daughters and parents be there for us on our deathbed. And we have to try to somehow stay connected to the soul and make sure that our body and our mind and our emotions are in sync. And that's what each of us calls our spiritual journey, is trying to do that. And for me, music has been a big part of trying to stay on that spiritual journey. And so I would say to people out there, find whatever it is for you creatively, or in your circle of friends or community, or your relationship with whatever you believe is your creator. You know, put that as a great importance, the primary importance in your life, and everything else should fall into place.
Well, Michael Franti, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us.
All right. Appreciate you.
Okay.
All right.
Goodbye.
Stay human.